So we are in the second chapter of the first part. There are two parts in Kena, in Katha Upanishad, and every one of them has three chapters. So we are in the second chapter at the end of the first part. We have still much to read. So maybe we will start with mantra.
Sahanavavatu, sahanaubhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu, mavidvishavahai.
We are in the at the end of the second chapter, somewhere 20-21. 20 we read, as I see, Asino Duram Vrajati Shayano Yati Sarvatah Kastam Madamadam Devam Mad Anyojnato Marhati Ashariram Shirireshu Anavastheshu Avasthitam Mahantam vibhumatmanam matva dhiruna shochati. It's very close to the Gita. Everywhere na shochati, he is not suffering. This we read, yes? Realizing the bodiless in bodies, the established in things unsettled, the great and omnipresent self, the wise and steadfast soul, grieves no longer. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha. In this we read.
No? No, no.
Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha na medhaya na bahuna shrutena. Very easy text. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyaha. Tasyaisha atma vivrinuti talam svam. So now something is strange said. The self is not to be worn by eloquent teaching, nor by brain power, nor by much learning, but only he whom this being chooses can win him. For to him the self bears his body. Now, what it says that you can't really realize that self by whatever you do. It's very similar in the Gita. It is said you can't know that unless that wants you to know it. If it wants you to know it, it will give you the means and the path and lead you and establish something for you that you will know it in that particular form of knowing. Well, it brought me to many thinkings about mukti in general. What is this ideal of mukti? Is it really reachable? Is it really something which all these great people who got this mukti are provoking us and leading us and asking us to follow their path? Can we really reach it? And I think we can't. This is my answer to you for now, for today, as I think. I think the idea of mukti altogether is impossible. This great avatars and people like Ramakrishna or Vivekananda, they got it by grace. and they were ready to receive it.
Does the word grace, as you've just used it,
not in a
Kriya. Is it in Sanskrit?
Yes. So they got it by that descent of the grace of the Guru or whatever, or by the grace of Atman, as it is said, whom he chooses, that one can receive or know him, because to him he reveals his body. Now, otherwise we can go round and round and know more and more details about the thing and in all particular ways and have glimpses and more glimpses, and finally we retire from all those glimpses and all that knowledge, and we can't reach it. We can't finally say that I see the Divine. You know what happened to Vivekananda and his one disciple who came to him? He said, but did you see God? And he said to him, yes, I saw him as I see you. He said, okay. And then he disappeared, that person. And much later, many years later, they found him in Himalayas, fully realized. That one conviction that you could see God was enough for him to really change his life. But that is again, it's a question of whether it was his or it was that spirit work. Well, it's both. It's encouraging and discouraging at the same time. I want to say that the ideal of mukti in general, how many muktas are there after Mother and Sri Aurobindo or Ramana Maharshi? Do you know many of them? His disciples who followed exactly his path for years, for all their lives. So this is just a very good answer to that question. Maybe that is not the path. Maybe there has to be another way. Well, anyhow, the text says that you can't know him unless it wants you to know him. It. But then it continues. Na virato duscharitam na shanto na samahitah na shanta manas vapi prajnanenainam apnuyat. None who has not ceased from doing evil, or who is not calm or not concentrated in his being, whose mind has not been tranquilized, can by wisdom attain to him. Now why is this continuation in this manner? First,
I think this is a contradiction of what you said before. Because what this says is, if you do these things, then it will choose you.
Okay.
For itself.
No? No, it says none. But who has
who has not. So that means, if you do those things, then the self will reveal itself to you.
May choose you.
Okay. May.
Will choose you.
May.
Will choose you.
No, it doesn't say it will.
May.
And that may and or will is exactly the whole. Because what is said before, nāyam ātmā pravacanena labhyā namedhāyana bahūna śrutena. So even if you got revelation of many of those inspirations and knowledge and glimpses, unless he chooses you, then you can reach him and reveals to you his body.
I don't see the word may.
Can by wisdom. It's possible. It's all
as an addition.
No, but Sanskrit text says labhya. Labhya, that which...
To attain.
Yes, which should be attained, must be attained. It is necessitatis futurum passive voice. Well,
so, I mean, you cannot realize the self unless the self decides that you can realize
yes.
the self.
In that
but
way,
you can make yourself more attractive to the self by ceasing from doing evil, being calm, and this as a likely candidate.
Yeah, but this idea of decides implies a kind of arbitrariness. But I don't believe that there is any such thing in reality.
Well, why not? Oh.
Because we are a spiritual process.
Yes. Is
and
it not?
That process is the will for itself to be realized.
Well,
there so are... if it because there is nothing other than that, when that does what it is supposed to do by virtue of itself, then it realizes itself. And there is no arbitrariness in that.
Well, if it would be so, then we would be all muktas already. But that's
no,
the
problem. Because there is the implication is that we want it as much as Nachiketas wants it.
Right. I think there is a catch here in both, because there is not only one will, unfortunately. Yes? It's not that our will of ourself is the same as the divine will. It seems that there is a contradiction between the two, and until it is becoming one, that what you said is not really fully realizable. Now, when it becomes one, so not to contradict that only by the choice of the self that you will be chosen by the self and it will reveal to you, the Upanishad continues thinking about those, because now they can drop from this path very easily, if it is so what is for us left to do, but there is much to do for all of us. So it engages you back into that, saying to you, but none of those whom the Spirit chose, there is a catch, none of those whom Spirit chose, who didn't cease from doing evil, so you can't really be among those candidates. Yes? And that is something else. It's not fully inevitable that Spirit will definitely, if you are not doing evils, or you are doing evils, will not choose you or choose you. And sometimes Spirit has its own things to do.
That's what you said.
Yes, that's what I said.
But the other problem is that there is the thing that Christ will choose for all who choose.
Yeah, there's an ancient tradition in the West, the Christian tradition, which is based on Christian esotericism, which is based on Greek esotericism, which is based on Egyptian esotericism, which eventually came to this Augustinian-Pelagian debate. According to the Augustinians, no amount of effort can win heaven, because it's a matter of grace. But if you don't prepare for the grace, then it's not likely to come to you. Whereas the Pelagians said, no, you can win the grace by your effort, by renunciation and purification and prayer and so on. And I happen to believe that teaching is closer to the teaching of yoga than the other one.
But at the same time, I agree with Misha. This brings to my mind the words of the Hour of God. There are spaces of time when it seems like, you know, the Spirit is not around. Or there are times when it is. But it doesn't mean that you have to stop making your effort. And sometimes it seems like you're just going round and round and round and doing your same thing and without any result. But you have to continue to do that, because when that moment arrives, you have to be absolutely ready to receive it and be enlightened or see it or whatever. But it's exactly that whole text says there are moments when this spirit...
Often this goes on, you did effort, and then you let go, I didn't, and you can't
stop making the effort. You have to continue steadily, whether you're seeing concrete results or not. Because when it arrives, it will be in a split second, and then if you're not ready, oh well, you missed your chance, and then you have to wait a while.
Actually, all of us, I think nobody can stop thinking that there is no way back, and the result of not doing whatever, it is every moment that you concentrate on a small fire inside you. And this is the result every moment we have, and the whole quality of the state is spirit. So our aim always will be clear.
The thing is that
for the progress of evolution upwards, I think God just wants us to keep trying. If we make it, good. If we don't make it, you're just pushing in the right direction, and maybe the next time around, you might get there.
I think the statement that you cannot reach him unless he agrees to reveal himself to you is important in the sense that you have to know that the divine is not just the state of your own only. There is a consciousness there which knows itself already and may decide things. Those, as in the hour of God, it is said there are times when all the efforts are giving very small results, and there are times when very small efforts lead to great realizations. And this is exactly where the decision of that consciousness or the evolutionary stage of that development decides for certain results. And sometimes breakthroughs, which we have by some individuals who sacrifice themselves fully, and the result is small, but it is very important for the whole movement. We do not see that. And that's why we cannot fully judge how far it works, because both views, I think, both are valid. Because the divine there is not just empty something waiting ourselves only. There is something more to it, which we do not know yet.
And I think also there are two poles, and you could not say I only go with this one, then you would never get the grace. Yeah. This is how you say they go with this eternal.
I can't understand what the advantage is to saying there's something that we don't know yet, and so there must be something that we don't know.
I will tell you what is advantage for me, at least, yes?
But I think you should definitely make that qualification.
It's for me, yes. Well, whatever, maybe for somebody else. I will just speak only for myself. The advantage is there, that you know that the divine is real. This is the only advantage. Because if this is all you, and you are the divine, then there is no such notion as a divine. You become, as you are, materialistic, purely. Well, whatever you may call it, spiritualistically materialistic. But you will never believe or move towards something which is higher than yourself. Okay, this is your view.
This is making a rule for yourself to convince yourself that there's something real that you don't know.
This is for you like this, because you make, this looks for you as a rule. For me it looks as a reality, not as a rule. This is a real, I feel the presence of it. I feel its intervention into my space. So it is not a rule. I don't make out of it a rule for myself to believe that this is true. I'm not doing this. You, because you don't have this view, you have another view, for you it looks like a rule, but for me it looks different. For me this looks like a rule, but I don't say it, yes? It's another view, which is also true. It's a look from bottom up, and this is look from up down.
Very similar to this experience. I went to quiet because I work, trying to work with the mind and the feeling of the body. And I tried to feeling to the body how to connect with our mind. So a lot of the session was to the mind just judging, couldn't do it. No? And then I, but I said, no, there must be a connection, there should be a connection. I will try and search for it. And then I was going with the bicycle down, rain poured down very much, and I then met this bicycle in the room. When I arrived at home, I got such a bliss from top to bottom. It was just this divine joke in it that I felt. It was this to look from different angle on this mind and physical, so that to and it was also, I really can laugh here when I see the snow.
Yes.
We should also always bear in mind the story of the six blind men who went to see the elephant, because the perspectives are different. We're looking at the same truth. And
yes,
people have approaches to it and a vision of it that's completely different from somebody else, and it is exactly the same thing.
It's mind is defining our visions and differences. Some people choose because it is closer to them, they were educated in that particular framework, to see it in this way. Others, they worked on it differently, and they built up another framework, which works for them and works for others, which is fine. Others feel presence from that. It's not necessarily that you will feel the presence of the divine through the same means, through the same framework.
Is used.
Of course, as without if, sanction there is nothing.
As if there was some decision that another power,
the call
other than you,
and the response,
seems to make.
Without response there is no yoga of Sri Aurobindo. Response is the grace. The call has to be made. The most sincere call from within has to call for this grace. And by the way, all Sri Aurobindo's yoga, what you read, what I read, what I see, what he speaks to his disciples, is based on this grace. And he every time says, man cannot do this yoga himself. He cannot do a thing. He cannot change an inch in his psychology. This thing has to come and to change and overflood you and take charge of you. You have to surrender. Always to surrender to this grace. It's not my concept. I actually follow it from that angle. But I see it also here, and it is surprisingly clearly stated that you cannot know it unless that wants you to know it. And that makes me think how far, what it means really. But it doesn't mean that Sri Aurobindo didn't say that I made myself a philosopher, I made myself a poet, I wasn't one. But I made myself. You can make many things. But this thing you can't make. It has to do it for you.
So what you can do, you can surrender and pray. And
yes.
And desire. And
in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. It's the same thing as Christianity.
Om. In the name of the Father, Om. You can do anything you want. It won't help. All right, this is... No. You're right.
You
this
it,
there are some things that you can do which will actually help.
Yes, yeah. And that's what the text
but
says.
Disputing that.
You just said you can do anything you want, it won't help.
But it is a joke.
And I would say that even the call in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, the call, the invocation is necessary for the response. And the response is yes. Assured.
Yes, call must be there. There will be no response unless you are not aware of your call. And this happened to the brother of the mother, her elder brother. We know the story very well. When he was crossing the bridge, and then suddenly the descent came, light from above.
Who's this?
Grasped him and said, to him, "You can be even as God." And then he said, "No, I want to serve humanity." And when he said this to the mother, she said, "Fool, you're a fool." And that's it. And that force withdrew. It was a proposal to the hidden call, which he didn't see. Proposal for him to change all his life. He cut it off, and that is not coming back, even if he will call it now. It's a chance of life. Next life, yes.
I may be getting this wrong, so please correct me. But in some aspects or some schools of Buddhism there, and there are famous Chinese paintings of it there, you have people cracking the statue of the Buddha, burning the books of the Buddha, because what's going to come to you is just going to come to you. You have these laughing, silly, wonderfully, completely enlightened people who have done what, we don't really know, but going through all of this, like we're going through here, you know, reading the text, etc., there, isn't what brings grace, I guess. But there's something which brings nirvana, I guess it is, to these
breaking
many happy souls.
Breaking many Buddhas won't bring you to nirvana.
No, it does. This is the point of the paintings. Smash the... I guess don't get too attached.
No, this is Zen statement. Yeah? Symbolic statement. It says that when you meet Buddha, kill him.
Yeah.
That means something else. First of all, you will never meet Buddha to kill. That means whatever you do, you can search for Buddha to kill all your life. You will never find him. That's exactly what it says. But anyhow, it's an interpretation. Yasya Brahma Chakshatram Cha Ubhe Bhavata Odhanah Mrityur Yasya Upasechanam Kaitha Veda Yatrasa. And here this is the conclusion. He to whom the sages are as meat and heroes as food for his eating, and death is an ingredient of his banquet, how thus shall one know of him where he abides? Now, Shubhendu translates it in his way, but it is very simple. To whom Brahma and Kshatra both are food, and Mrityu is Uposechana, that is souls. Death is a soul at his food, in his banquet. Where does he live? Who is he? Even death is only a souls for his background.
I have a feminist question here. In the Sanskrit, is the pronoun masculine, or is that just an English translation of the pronoun? Is the pronoun masculine in the Sanskrit? Yes.
Sarvanama, you mean pronoun, word pronoun?
He.
No,
he.
Of course.
He does, or him,
of course.
Or he does.
Yes, it is he. Shobindu would not translate it for, it is saha, yes, he.
But there is like, I feel like in the very beginning, there was a lot of symbolism, you know, in the story, and in the books which you got and so on. One time I saw this in Kirtana, I looked at the Atharva Veda about this Udana, this meaning. It has a very deep spiritual meaning there, so I was thinking, who knows where this is the final story here in this text. What is that? One could even go one day into this.
Yeah, this is... this Udana is used not once, yes, and not only in this text. In Upasechana. And this text is, we can meet in other texts also quoted. But I want to ask you, do you have some questions to this chapter? Otherwise we go into the next, which is also very good. Shall we go? Well, there are two views, basically, and they are both valid. The divine is not only involved and evolving, the divine is also transcendental. And also from there it flashes down. This is the vision of the Veda. The divine is not only coming from within, to the surface, but also from above. So there are two movements of the divine. Both are differently named. And if this breakthrough from above will not take place, the growing from within may take long time. It is not necessarily that it will not lead to the final emancipation. Yes, nature will do its yoga, Sri Aurobindo says, and it will arrive, but it will take endless time.
Gracias.
So we are moving into third chapter of the first part. Ritam pibantau sukritasya loke guham pravishtau parame parartye chaya tapau brahma vido vadanti panchagnayo ye cha trinachiketa. Yama speaks, there are two that drink deep of the truth in the world of work well accomplished. They are lodged in the secret plane of being and in the highest kingdom of the Most High in their dwelling. This is what we were just talking now before. There are two, and these two, the self which is unborn and the self which is involved, they look like different selves, but they are one being. As of light and shade of knowers of the Brahman speak of them, and those of the five fires, and those who kindle thrice the fire of Nachiketa. Now we will be coming to this kindling of the fire, and it will be interesting to review it in a Vedic sense.
It's interesting, he doesn't use kindling in the who kindle thrice, but in this book there is no kindle.
Those who have the three fires.
Who have three Nachiketas.
Who have the three fires.
Yeah,
because kindle
the
is very important.
Yeah.
So what's the Sanskrit word?
Well, let us go word by word. Ritam pibantau. Two are drinking of ritam. Two drinkers of ritam. And the ritam, we know, it's a dynamic truth. So the truth is drunk by the two. Sukritasya loke. In the world of perfect, perfectly made world. Guham pravishtau. Those two entered into the cave, or into the hidden place. Parame parardhe. In the transcendental higher hemisphere. Parardhe. In the higher half. Chayata pao. Brahmavido vadanti. And Brahmavidah speak. Chaya and Tapa. They are two, the shadow and the fire, the force. Shubindu says, light and shade, the knowers of the Brahman speak of them, those of the five fires and those who kindle thrice the fire of Nachiketas. Panchagnayah yecha trinachiketa. Now we are coming into very complex symbolism of the Veda. First of all, panchagnayah. What are these five fires and what is trinachiketas? The heavenly fire of the three.
Three is
nachiketas? Trinachiketas is a fire.
Yeah.
The three flames.
Are the three included in five, or are there eight?
No, they're not included. But yeah, I will leave this for you to think. And then if you have questions next time. Yah setuh ijananam aksharam brahmayat param abhayam titirshatam param nachiketam shakemahi. May we have strength to kindle Agni Nachiketas. This is important. Nachiketam Shakemahi. It's a very unusual form, Shakemahi. You will never meet it in this form. May we be able to Nachiketas.
And here it is long now because it refers to the fire of Nachiketas.
Yes, this is the fire of Nachiketas. For he is the bridge of those who do sacrifice. And he is Brahman, supreme and imperishable, and the far shore of security to those who would cross this ocean. Can you see what he is? He is all. He is not only here, not only on the way to that, but he is also that at the same time. May we have strength to kindle Agni Nachiketas, for he is the bridge to those who do sacrifice, and he is Brahman supreme and imperishable. He is the bridge because the sacrifice itself, why it starts ritam pibantau, they are drinking the dynamic truth in the supremely, in the perfectly made world, entered into the hidden space in the highest hemisphere, in this, in the transcendental. Now, what is being located to us to see that this is one space? Transcendental is not only above, it is also within. If you move within, you move into the transcendental realm as you move above. So the three-dimensional model does not explain much, but the stepping deep within, going within, is recovering or discovering the transcendental. Because transcendental embraces heaven and earth like this, from both sides. As it is said in the Veda, Savitar embraces night with his two hands from both sides. The night is not night below and not night above. It's light. It's only within night. So the transcendental is not only above, it's also kind of stepping back. So that's why it is said, drinking the dynamic truth in the perfectly made world, they entered into the hidden space that is stepped within and in the highest hemisphere above. Within and above, and in this supremely made world, it is one and the same place. Now it continues, Yah Setu, and that which is the bridge for Ijananam, for those who are sacrificing, or have sacrificed, and this is an important thing, those who are engaged in this, bringing that within spirit to the front, and that above spirit to the manifestation, the ones who are sacrificing. They are inviting this higher spirit or this higher consciousness to manifest. He is the bridge of those. He is the means for those. The Nachiketas, the fire which is kindled here. This consciousness which has to be fed, which is growing. He is also Brahma Yat Param. He is that spirit which is transcendental, here, in manifestation. Abhayam Param. Again, Param is that show, transcendental show. Abhayam, which has no bhaya, has no fear. Titir Shatam, of those who want to cross to that. Of those who want to cross to that, he is that show where there is no fear. May we be able to kindle this fire. Because he will bring us to that shore, here in manifestation.
So it's the words remind me of those lines from Savitri. She is the golden bridge, the yes. Wonderful fire, the luminous heart of the unknown energy, the magnet of our difficult ascent, the might of all that never yet came down. But this also reiterates what Rod was trying to say, which is if the call is there, the goal is certain.
That's what I wanted to also to ask. In the moment you kindle, if you will be able and have the strength, the argument is in that moment you can reach the transcendental.
No.
No.
A fire, to kindle the fire, is much more complex thing than here. To kindle the fire of the consciousness here in this manifestation is to arrive at aspiration which is kindled by the divine. Now, this fire which he received from Yama, he received initiation into this knowledge. He received it not from himself. Yama gave him this knowledge. He kindled this fire for him, heavenly fire he wanted to know about. This is on another shore he received this initiation. It can't be done. It's not an imitation of doing sacrifice. It's a real thing. The consciousness is already kindled here, and it grows. And it can grow. And you can feed it with everything you have, with all dynamism of your manifested life. You surrender to it. You throw into the fire everything you are and you have, and it grows. And it transforms all those things into the things divine. That's what it is. And I'm not sure that we are yet there. We are on the way to arrive to that sacrifice. But we already understand what it is. We're doing it mentally, vitally, we try to do it spiritually, psychically, and it sometimes happens. But then the fire is not always kindled. The lamp is not trimmed, is sullen. We are not, well, I am not yet there.
As I see it,
please take it.
You know, all human souls are on the way, on the journey, on the path. We are fortunate we have a road map.
And more, we are more fortunate we have a grace.
We have a
grace.
Grace.
Grace which will save, which will kindle the aspiration in the heart. Okay, something you want to say? Something? Hmm? It's still a little time? Yeah. Atmanam rathinam vidhi, shariram ratham evatu, buddhim tu sarathim vidhi, manah prahgraham evacha. Know the body for a chariot and the soul for the master of the chariot. Know reason for the chariot and the mind for the reins only. I think it's a beautiful image which is used in the Gita. Atmanam rathinam vidhi. Know that the self is the rathin, the one who is chariot, the Krishna. Krishna in the battlefield. He is Atma. Shariram ratham evato, and the body is the chariot. Buddhim tu sarathim vidhi, and buddhi, our higher intellect, is the one who is driving the chariot.
So that means the first one is not the driver, he sits in the chariot, the ratim.
Yes, maybe. Maybe, yes, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not good to compare it with Krishna.
So reason and mind are separated, I'm not the same. Mm-hmm. Reason, for me, if I have a mind, I can reason, so I don't understand. He separates reason and mind?
Yes, because mind, manas, is that mind which is dealing with senses, and buddhi is an high intelligence. It's an intelligence which is not operating by senses anymore. Pure mind, pure reason.
Can be. And the mind, very much, very much. Yeah.
Wonderful. We can compare Krishna again with Sarathi. Sarathi is Krishna because he argues and he leads the self of this chariot of Arjuna to a particular result. Indriyani hayan ahuh vishayan steshu gocharan atma indriya mano yuktam atmendriya mano yuktam bhokteti bhoktetyahurmaneshinah. The senses they speak of as the steeds and the objects of sense, as the paths in which they move. Now we are coming down to senses from that picture of Atman, of Buddhi and Manas. Now we speak about senses. The senses they speak of as the steeds, the horses in the chariot, and the objects of sense as the paths in which they move. Now there is the whole this notion of withdrawing senses back from the objects of sense, which are on which Yoga Sutras are based, Pratyahara. Pratyahara is a stage where the senses are no more seeking satisfaction in the object of sense. They are drawn back into your own self and kept there, free from the object of sense. This is the beginning of mastery of your consciousness. As long as senses are running after the objects, your horses move and you can't really stop them. You can restrain them once in a while with your manas, but it won't work for long. So they follow these paths in which they move. So the one who is yoked with self and the mind and the senses is the enjoyer, say the thinkers. So it is, who is that enjoyer? Who is yoked with the self, from capital S, with the mind, with the senses, and those objects of sense. Who is this bhokta? The divine. Krishna speaks about himself in the Gita as adhiyajna. He says, I am in the heart of every man. I am presiding over the sacrifice. I enjoy every sacrifice here. He is the Bhakta, the Supreme. He is using the self, he is using the mind, he is using the body and the objects of sense for his enjoyment. Otherwise he would not be here. He would not manifest himself. It's a concept of Purushottama. There is a Supreme Being here, enjoying every move. There were a beautiful description of Krishna in the battlefield where he fights, and the arrows are flying and already hitting him, and he is bleeding and he is sweating, and he is full of joy and ananda, absolutely rejoicing this feast of the divine. Well, yes, for our mind it's a bloody vision. For him it is an adventure. It's something else. Yastu avijñānān bhavati ayuktena manasā sadā tasya indriyāni avashyāni tasyendriyāni avashyāni duṣṭāśvā iva sāratheh. Now, he that is without knowledge, with his mind ever unapplied, ayuktena means without not restrained, his senses are to him as wild horses and will not obey the driver of the chariot. Now, who doesn't work on his mind and discipline it and work on his senses, he will be driven by his wild horses everywhere. So if you look into these words, yaha tu avijñānavan, the one who is not distinguishing, avijñānavan, who has no vijñāna, bhavati, ayuktena manasā saha, not by yoked mind, with unyoked mind, with not controlled manas, tasya indriyani avashyani, of him the indriyas, the senses, avashyani, not restrained, not under control, duṣṭāśvā iva, as bad horses of the sārathih, of the one who cannot control his chariot.
Wild.
Yeah, wild. Duṣṭā here, spoiled horses. You know, those horses which you cannot control, even if you already try to control them, they don't listen. But yastu vijnanavan bhavati yuktena manasasada. What is it to this? Yasyendriyani vashyani sadashva eva sarateh. But he that has knowledge with his mind ever applied, his senses are to him as noble steeds, and they obey the driver. Now here we have this concept which Rod is proposing with the control of the senses and the mind, and sarathi, the driver can drive this chariot. But the chariot is Atman, their self, and the bhokta is somewhere else. Not even here. Well, here, but not fully here. Enjoying the whole scene. Yastu avijnanavan bhavati amanaskah sadashuchih nasatatpadam apnoti sansaram chadhigachati. Yea, he that is without knowledge and is unmindful and is ever unclean reaches not the goal, but wanders in the cycle of phenomena. It's an interesting translation, adhigachati, because adhigam has two meanings: to go above, to go up, or to go around, or to learn. So he wanders in the cycle of phenomena means he learns endlessly. He learns endlessly the phenomena, which has no end. Sri Aurobindo found a way to say it.
That is what samsara, as we know it from.
Samsara, yes, it's a Buddhistic term, as we know it, yes. The
samsara is a Sanskrit.
Yes, but it is used in Buddhism, yes? Meaning the cycle of life, yes? From which you cannot get rid of, or cannot come, you cannot free yourself. You are here, wherever you go, it's endless, and always you end in the same lap of death and life and birth and suffering and joy and so on. So he is not reaching to that highest state, but learns or goes around in this samsara, or Sri Aurobindo says, wanders in the cycle of phenomena. Yastu vijnanavan bhavati samanaskak sadashuchih, opposite to this statement, next statement, satu tatpadam apnoti yasmad bhuyo na jayate. Now, interesting. Let us look into this. But he that has knowledge and is mindful and pure always reaches that goal whence he is not born again. What does it mean? He reaches that goal from where he is not born again.
Moksha.
Moksha.
I think they can decide as where they like to go. If they like to go back on earth, they can find other planes in the world, like Ramana Yogananda, which is
Can you interpret this in a Vedic way? I want to Nishtha to think, because this is where we are all looking into this mukti concept and think that this was developed later. Because here this is still on the edge with Vedic knowledge. It doesn't have fully yet that perception. And I sense it, and I can really build on it another vision for you to see that it might mean something else that we habitually or spiritually now understand it. To be not born again does not mean not to be born again. It means the state from which you are not born again without knowing what is going on. It is the stage in which you are fully aware of yourself as an infinite and eternal being.
Free.
Yes, free, unborn. But it doesn't mean at all not to be born again. You can choose to be born or not to be born, or you can't even choose, as Sri Aurobindo says. He says, I even doubt that it is possible, because the whole sacrifice of the Purusha was made for this particular manifestation. We all decided, we were free in our choice to decide to plunge or not to plunge into that darkness. So we decided to plunge when we were free. Why should we now, when we are free, decide to stay there? Well, we can decide to stay there. It is in our decision when we are free and infinite and eternal. But most probably we will not have this choice. Some...
Another rule that most of the people get free, and that they choose, of course, they get away from the
I want to say that this development of a mukti concept, that we all have to run away from this manifestation, is a mental exercise. It has nothing to do with the reality as such, and that's what I think Vedic view was much more profound. You can't run away from here. You can reach the freedom, and freedom is necessary for manifestation of the divine here in that.
Yeah, because if it sounds to me to be born again, it's kind of sad, because what should else actually? Because actually everything happened here. All the progress in all manifestation and manifestation here. Then you come then with a consciousness you are immortal. So of course you will not think I'm born here.
You know, I was mentioning this Nadkarniji, who was interviewing the best dancer, the most beautiful dancer in India. And she said she was a talented artist, dancer, everything beautiful, most beautiful lady. And when to the question, what would you like to realize in this world, she said, I would like to reach the state from which I will never be born again. I will never come back to earth. He said, it's so sad. You're so beautiful. You have so much to contribute. Why do you want to run from this earth into somewhere else where you have yourself there? So what's the point of going there? Heaven we always possessed, as Sri Aurobindo says, yes? It's the earth we never possessed. That's why we came here.
So don't be sannyas.
Sannyasa is only to become free from the attachment,
yes.
But no more than that. Not to be free from manifestation, to be free from attachment. This is what Sri Aurobindo describes as true tyaga, and he speaks about it in the essays on the Gita. This is true sannyasa. That's why nobody of those, Shankara and others, couldn't really truly interpret the Gita, especially the Karma Khanda. It was impossible for them to see what it means. To be engaged and to be free. How? So we will... Yes?
So then our goal here on earth would be that we on earth get the knowledge we are immortal, totally in our being. Then we would never be born again, because we are always immortal. We can choose to leave our job or clothes now, go and come back with another clothes. And that is mean, that is good in the figure.
No, the achievement here is about your consciousness. That you will drop cloth anyhow, and even if you don't want to. Yes, yes. But to reach that light from which you see who you are, who you truly are, and to be engaged in the same time, kurvanneveha karmani, and doing here verily works, being free, is exactly what is needed. That is the manifestation of the divine. Well, the manifestation of the divine is done by nature also slowly, gradually, through the tardy evolutionary development. But it comes to the level where you can be aware of the presence of the divine here. Chances are bigger or smaller, I can't say, but
I think we must be bigger
because we are kind of progressing, yes? We are evolving, so we have more access to the knowledge before people didn't have, yes? We can read Vedas, we can read Upanishads sitting here in the class. Before, this was a knowledge for few only, yeah? For those who were orally kind of from teacher to the student. Now we all can have access to it and enjoy it. Vijnana sarathi yastu manav pragrahavan narah sodvanah param apnoti tad vishnuv paramam padam. Now we are coming to the Vishnu. That man who uses the mind for reins and the knowledge for the driver reaches the end of his road, the highest seat of Vishnu. So Vijnana Sarathi, the one, the Buddhi, the Sarathi, who has Vijnana, who has realized the Vijnana level and managed to hold his mind, Pragrahavan, Manah Pragrahavan Narah, controlled his mind, because this is the most difficult thing in yoga, to control your mind, which is following the senses, yes? Running after the senses and the objects of sense. The one who established a higher consciousness in the intellect or in intelligence, which is supported by Vijnana, by the transcendental mind, by Indra's mind. Okay, I can say where Indra and Maruts are already in one gana, in Vedic sense. And who can control his mind here? He reaches the highest, that shore of the path, which is the higher level of Vishnu, or the higher adore of Vishnu, seat of Vishnu.
The Veda says the Chinese town and the sea is always lighting up. They light it up by being in the body, so this makes it kind of mention that it doesn't have to be out of birth. They use this imagery, that's the question.
Yes. Well, what is interesting here, that seat of Vishnu is mentioned suddenly, which is, according to Sri Aurobindo's interpretation, is higher than Indra's seat, yes?
Brahman, what is Brahman?
Yeah, all right. Brahman is another concept of later kind. Vishnu is that the Godhead of the over-mental level, over-mind, the outburst of the supermind into the creation, this oceanic supermind which descends and creates the manifestation. This is Vishnu. So the one who gets support from the higher supramental in his mind, in his higher mind, and controls his mind perfectly, he goes, he reaches that highest shore. It's nearly technically defining how you can reach to that higher shore, what you have to do. It's quite interesting to look from a Vedic point of view. And now I will leave you with a puzzle of Katha Upanishad, the last verse for today. Indriyebhyah para hyarthah Arthebhyascha param manah manasastu para buddhih buddher atma mahan para. It's not like in the Gita. That's why I want to leave you with this puzzle. Then the senses The objects of sense are higher. Confusing, huh?
Than the senses.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yes. The sense, the objects of sense are higher than the senses. And higher than the objects of sense is the mind. Now, in the Gita, Indriyani Parani Yahuh is opposite. Indriyevyah Param Manah. It is said that Indriyani are higher, and higher than Indriyas, Manas, and higher than Manas, Buddhi, and higher than Buddhi, Atma. Here, what is said is a very unusual statement. Look at this. Higher than senses are the objects of sense, and higher than the object of sense is the mind, Manas. I leave you with this puzzle for the next time, and if whatever theories you have, please think about it. How come that the objects of sense can be higher than the senses, and the mind is higher than the objects of sense? And it is in the Sanskrit text. Make sense? Wait a minute. Before there was an image, the senses are the horses. The reins with the chariot he holds is Manas. It is tied to the senses. And the horses are running towards the objects of sense. Now what is said here, that the senses are lower than the object of sense. And the higher than the object of sense is mind.
If the object of senses is a good meal, or the object of senses is glorious,
whatever,
the divine,
whatever the object of sense, the object of sense. No, just this is not this comparison. The comparison goes like that. Indriyevyah parayantha. The arthas, the object of sense, is higher. The objects of sense are higher than the indriyas. For me, it makes no sense whatsoever. I can't figure out what it is. If you can, please.
I think the objects of sense are universal principles, or the senses are just in the body. They're temporal and they're manifest. The objects of sense, such as light and sound and color and shape and form, are universals. They are the product of mind. Mind is manifested in the universals first, and then in the senses.
But how senses are related to the mind then? Through the object of sense?
Mind is not something which exists inside the body, first of all. Mm-hmm. The idea of liberation of Purusha is that it is even beyond the universal.
Yes, but your mind...
So as we progress towards liberation, we exceed the limits of the body, we exceed the limits of the mind, and so on, out.
Yes, this I agree, but senses are related to the mind by all definitions through all yogic and Upanishadic literature. Senses are nothing but kind of extensions of the mind in a sense. And mind, Manas, is a synthesizer of senses in the Sankhya and Gita. Manas synthesizing Indriyas and collects their inputs about the object of sense and makes out of it a picture. So for the soul to know. In a way, here is, I like the description, because what it does, it puts a manifestation between senses and the mind. It puts manifestation, the plunge of the senses into the darkness. When they plunged, they wanted to come back. They are secretly related to the higher mind, but they lost that relation by that plunge. There was a gap. I can think that that is about that. Otherwise, Katha would not make it like this. There was an gap within the mind, because all these faculties of Purusha disengaged themselves from him before plunging into the inconscient. And then they are secretly related to Purusha, but in themselves they are not fully related. They are running after the object of sense, and object of sense for them is material manifestation, and mind is for them heavenly, Prithivi and Yauch. These two within the body, what they are kind of dealing with, but from below. Otherwise, I don't have any other vision. If you have something else, please share next time. So let us finish today. It's already time come close to this. We will have tea and cookies.
Tamastu, ma vidvishah.